on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
When I went to college and started to study and learn I to try to understand my behavior, I realized that my acting out behavior from my early teenage years was not just from the wounds that I had that hadn't been addressed, but was also seeking a measure of well, who am I? Who am I? What am I? And what am I made of? And so a rite of passage in a traditional culture, there's no guarantee that you're going to succeed in the rite of passage. In fact, you might not even live through the rite of passage. So it's a real testing in some way of you, and it's how you meet that test and how you respond to that test that can grow you with the help of the elders and the wisdom of the ceremony of the initiation into a recognition that you're not here by accident, that the great creative powers of the universe give you your life with a purpose.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth. I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, I am joined by Tom Pinkson, PhD, a psychologist, ceremonial retreat leader, shaman, and sacred storyteller, to discuss his latest book, The Psychedelic Shaman, which explores shamanic practices as tools for personal and social transformation. Tom touches upon the importance of initiatory experiences, spiritual activism, and the need for communities to come together to address global crises. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Tom Pinkson, PhD, is a psychologist, ceremonial retreat and vision fast leader, sacred storyteller, and shaman. For 32 years, he worked with terminally ill children at the Center for Attitudinal Healing in California, successfully integrating the wisdom teachings of the Huichol and other medicine teachers into the world of the practicing psychologist. His most recent work includes training in the hardiness factor, training for emotional resilience, and a new vision of aging, working consciously with the challenges and opportunities of the elder years. He is the founder of Wakan, a nonprofit organization committed to restoring the sacred in daily life, and author of several books, including Shamanic Wisdom of the Huichol, Medicine Teachings for Modern Times. He joins me today to discuss his latest book, The Psychedelic Shaman, The Wisdom Warrior's Path to Transformation. Tom, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Thanks for having me. Good to be with you.
Well, I'm glad that we finally were able to make this happen. That's been a roller coaster, I think, on both of our parts. But I am very, very happy to speak with you. I wanted to start. I've read your book, The Psychedelic Shaman, and enjoyed it quite a bit. And a lot of it is biographical. And I thought that I would ask you to maybe talk a little bit about your spiritual journey for anyone in my audience who may not be familiar with you and your work, because you've got quite an interesting story about how you ended up becoming a psychologist and ceremonialist and shaman.
So the question is how I got started?
Yeah, yeah. Talk a little bit about your spiritual journey.
Okay. Well, my spiritual journey started, at least on a conscious level, in 1949, I think it was, when 2 months before my fourth birthday, my father died. Mm. And my mother had to go into the hospital for emergency thyroid operation. I didn't see her for 6 weeks. So I was kind of bounced around between my seven aunties for a period of time with no opportunity to deal with grief, loss. Nobody knew how to deal with a kid at that age in the late 40s who just lost the father. So the teaching was that, of course, I didn't recognize it at the time. It was just traumatic at the time. But as I reflected back on it, it was that experience that taught me there's this thing called death that can come and take somebody we love and doesn't need our permission. And so that destroyed the notion in my mind of reality from the fairy stories that I would have read to me at night, and they all lived happily ever after. So that was destroyed. And looking back on it from the adult perspective, I can recognize that that set me on a quest. Hmm. And the quest was, given this reality of death, what, if anything, is worth living a life for? What values, what purpose, if anything, is worth living a life for when death can come anytime, take you and the people you love? That also opened me up to, I think, the kind of vision all children come in with. They see the thing, the king doesn't have any clothes on from that fairy tale. They just see what's true. They don't have any censors about expressing it. And so that natural ability, I think, that all children come in was deepened by my father's death with, I'm only interested in people who are being real about who they are, where they are, and what does have meaning here. And so at that time in the cultural environment, as today, still very materialistic and ego identity based satisfaction, and let me get mine, and if other people get hurt, doesn't matter as long as I get mine, and the whole perception of separation. And so I didn't find in mainstream culture much of anything that was worth anything, that to me spoke to my heart and my soul, had meaning for me. And it wasn't until I got exposed to other cultures than mainstream Eurocentric culture. Like when I was 14, I started doing construction work. This is back in Maryland. And most of the men I worked with were Black men. And after I passed their tests, I was kind of accepted into their culture because I was doing a man's work. And they could tell because of my background before my dad died, being brought up in New York City in an interracial milieu, that I didn't carry the prejudice or racism that they were used to from Caucasians. So I was accepted into their culture, and that was the first, the doorway into, here I'm experiencing people who are being real about their feelings and who see through the hypocrisy of the culture that I see. And so we can connect on that real level. When the fact of not having my grief addressed at all after my father died imploded. It came out initially as, or manifested as, life-threatening illness when I was young. And then when I was a teenager, what had imploded and hadn't been dealt with came out fueled by testosterone with anger. The pain and grief acted out with anger and the feeling that, well, I got fucked over here, so I'm just going to fuck over society twice as hard. And got involved in alcohol and fueled violent behavior and getting involved with a gang and all kinds of behavior that without God, what I call God's grace now, I could be dead or in jail. So with that grace, I did make it through those years. I call them the shadow years, 14 to 17. And I barely got out of high school, barely went to high school, didn't respect it. But then I went to junior college. I wanted to apply myself and learn about what I was interested in learning about instead of being forced into a box, feeling forced into a box. Well, you have to take this to go to college and to do this, that, and the other thing. So I applied myself in junior college. I was able to start over. Nobody knew me. And lo and behold, I made the dean's list and the honor roll and proved to myself and others that, you know, I wasn't just a criminal. And transferred up to San Francisco State as an undergraduate in 1965, which was just the beginning of the, it's called the hippie renaissance revolution. And so I came right into it, which was fueled by LSD. And I was a very cynical, politically active atheist, but I was interested in the unconscious. And so LSD appealed to me as a tool to explore the unconscious that could help me understand the destructive behavior I was doing as a young person. After a year of preparation, because I had a lot of anxiety and fear of, well, what horrible things might be lurking in my subconscious that if they come out, I'm just going to freak me out. So it took me a year to work through all of that, and then went ahead and had my initial experience with people I trusted in a quiet setting. And it totally blew out the fuse box of my understanding of reality and who and what I was. And it was totally numinous, three fields of what, what's his name, Sheldrake calls morphogenetic fields of information. that totally transformed my understanding of life, the universe, and took me into a place of infinite, unconditional love, light, as the basic essence of our being and of existence underneath the veils of illusion of Maya. And that there's no such thing as separation. We're all interconnected in this weave of infinite oneness. Call that God or the goddess or the Tao or Buddha or whatever. And so I wanted to, when I came down from that experience and what it opened me up to, I wanted to try to understand and integrate what I'd seen and learn about. And so that took me into the studies of the Eastern cosmology, religion, and in 65, 66, 67, Haight Street was a smorgasbord of Buddhist, Taoist teachings and gurus from the East. So I have to just walk down the block and you could learn different techniques. And in college, I took courses to understand Asian cosmology and religion and spirituality and read the sacred texts. And eventually, having learned practices that are still a part of my life, yoga and meditation and Tai Chi, it came into my awareness, as much as I'm getting from these Eastern traditions, as much as they nurture me in my life and my growth, I'm living on a turtle island, what Native people call Turtle Island here in the United States. And I want to learn how the spirituality of this land where I'm living was expressed and understood by the indigenous people that have been here, because that's where I live, this is where I'm going to die, and so I want to learn that. So that pointed me in the direction, well, I need to connect with Native people and learn from them about what was my question from childhood, what if anything is worth based living a life on. And then secondarily, when I got out of graduate school from Berkeley in the 69, and had to go to work, find a job, initially I was hired by some people to teach about 10 young kids as an alternative school. I was it. And I had no clue what to do or how to work with them. And so at one point, I remembered that in my early 20s, a number of different sources said I was supposed to be a teacher. I didn't feel like a teacher, even though I was ostensibly being paid to teach these young kids something. Tarot readings and psychic readings and a number of different factors said to me, you're supposed to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. So here I was floundering with these kids, and I felt really bad about that. And I said, I'm supposed to be a teacher, and I don't consider that I have anything really meaningful to teach. But if I'm supposed to be a teacher in this life, then I better learn something that I consider meaningful. And so what do I consider meaningful? So I reflected on that and said, well, what I'm interested in learning about is how it works, how the universe works. And so that interwove with my initial opening with the LSD in 66 and searching for meaning from the childhood loss. And that's would really open the doorway for me to connect with Native American people here, that eventually led to 11-year apprenticeship with the Huichol shamans in Mexico and traveling around the world to the Yukon through to the Amazon to Southeast Asia to learn and study with elders about how to specifically work with sacred medicine, psychoactive medicine plants that have been so powerful in my opening. And how they use these experiences and these potent psychoactive activators in a way that was socially integrative. And in their rituals and ceremonies, which were actually, as I came to learn, the results of tens of thousands of years of research and development on how to be in relationship with these sacred plants in ways that actualize the highest potentials of what they can help us experience. Waking up, which I summarize as waking up, wising up, and to live love alive in 2025. And yeah. So having just turned 80 years old a couple of months ago, I'm very thankful to still have my wits somewhat about me and relatively good health to be able to act on the assignments I get from spirit, which comes out of surrendering to spirit and saying, you've whatever I have left in my life, I want to use it in a way that's in alignment with the purpose you've given me, life, and the teachings you've given me, that you made me understand, and not just for me, but to share with other people, and therefore the books and the retreats. And I'm leaving next week for my 51st Vision Quest experience. And so it's an ongoing process of opening, learning, and then trying to integrate what I've learned into my life, in my daily life, and then share with others what might be helpful to them in facing the challenges that we face as folks in modernity with all of its insanity.
Yeah, it is a little bit insane. But thank you for sharing all of that. I really enjoyed reading your story in the book. And there's a little bit more detail in the book for anyone who's interested. I want to ask a couple of questions based on what you just said. And I think that maybe the first question I would ask is, you've talked about some of the plant medicines and the psychedelics. But in the book, you actually use psychedelic in a larger sense. And that feeds into the title of the book, Psychedelic Shamanism. So I was wondering if maybe you could explain what you mean by psychedelic and psychedelic shaman in the title of your book.
Okay. Well, the term psychedelic refers to mind expanding. So for me, other than a visionary experience I had as a child when I was about 10 or 11 years old, and I had a fever, a precursor to polio, which fortunately I didn't get, but a very high fever led to me hallucinating. The wallpaper of my room at the time started to move and undulate and breathe. And I had no conceptual framework for understanding what was happening, but it just really got my attention, to say the least. And I realized, although I had no words to put on it, there's more going on here than I have any clue about. So the second experience of my mind being open to a larger reality than the one I'd been unconsciously conditioned into by Eurocentric conditioning was with the LSD, and then subsequent experiences with mushrooms and with peyote and ayahuasca. My nut was so hard to crack, I needed psychedelics to open me up. Not everybody needs that. And with the terms mind expanding, then I think we both know, and everybody listening to this, there's many different ways we can expand our consciousness. And so in writing the book, while primarily initially my teachings and awareness expansion came through psychedelics, and then I deepened and furthered that with the Vision Quest work and many other techniques that didn't involve plant medicine, I wanted to open a doorway for potential readers to recognize that the teachings I'm talking about that have come through this experience, that basically they came from nature in two different ways. Plants, nature, that I ate, nature, going into nature body, and going out to fast and be in nature for periods of days and nights on Vision Quest. So I was using an internal access to nature and quote external access to nature. And on the Vision Quest, didn't take any mind altering substances, but instead actually fasting for the whole time. So to me, psychedelic, although usually in a common reference in our minds from our culture, is like seeing all kinds of distortions, the visual, amazing things or scary things or whatever they are. But I wanted to get across the point that we can have psychedelic experiences, and people have psychedelic experiences of transcendent from the ego identity without taking substances. So it's a both and, it's an either or. And shamanism, it's not a religion, but it's humanity's oldest way of relating to the mystery of seen and unseen creation and the dynamic forces that manifest what we see. And it's really tools and practices, you might say, shamanism, of how to open a doorway in the mind to access those expanded states of consciousness, the psychedelic states. And they're grounded in experiences, like I said, tens of thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years, people paying attention to what seems to be the most efficacious ways of working with these substances to bring us to the fullest potentials of them. And so a shaman is someone who's gone through a lengthy initiation with the tradition and passed the tests of what is called for and come out the other side of the toothpaste tube, you might say, I haven't been transformed. And it doesn't mean, it's going to be real clear, it does not mean in any case that I'm an enlightened being of perfection. Every day is a daily work and process of trying to integrate and honor what I've been given, what I've seen, and what I know is true.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And I say this a lot on the podcast, but I kind of inherently distrust people who make claims of being enlightened. I trust people who are like, hey, no, I'm doing the best that I can. It's an ongoing journey. I find that more honest and that there are better teachings in there, I think. But I always quote Henry David Thoreau in Walden, where he wrote, I've never met a man who is quite awake. If I had, how could I look him in the face?
I consider myself and I say this because I have a lot of material to work with as having a PhD in bungling.
Yeah, yeah, I like that.
Just stumbling and bumbling along, trying to do the best I can.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think that's perfect. One of the things that you write about, and you've mentioned it here, and I want to try if I can to maybe connect this to the general sort of state of the world, because the state of the world is quite frankly bonkers right now in a number of reasons. One of my primary concerns is the environmental crises, plural, that we are living through, but there are plenty of others. But what's important is initiation, because you have gone through your own initiations and you're leading people through initiations. And I've heard it said before that, or argued, that one of the issues that humanity is facing, or specifically Western people living in Western societies, is there's no longer any kind of initiation, especially for young men. And that it seems that that might be one of, just one, but one of the issues that's driving the bonkers world that we're living in. Is that in alignment with what you're thinking or in writing in the book?
Yeah, totally. And just to step back from that, I think the initial root cause of the problems we have in the world today comes from the illusionary perception that Eurocentric culture unconsciously conditions us into, that we're separate, that we're a thing. You're a thing, I'm a thing, the microphone's a thing, you know, everything's a thing, and we're separate, which is the exact opposite of what the particle physicists tell us and the spiritual teachers throughout history tell us, that there is no such thing as separation, that we're all interwoven in a oneness, and whatever we do to another, the earth or the animal, we do to ourselves and we do to our grandchildren. Because there is no separation. So to me, that's the root cause of all the problems that we have. A manifestation of that in our Western Eurocentric culture is that in our alienation from our own nature, our alienation from Mother Nature, which leads us to do behaviors toward nature, that because it's separate, then we can dump nuclear waste in the ocean because it's far away, or we can dump nuclear waste or garbage, you know, in the black neighborhoods or the Chicano neighborhoods or the people of color, because they don't matter anyway, and who gives a shit, and it's separate from us, and as long as it's out of our sight. So leading to the problems we have with the environmental crisis. So one manifestation of that alienation is that we don't recognize the girls get initiated, you might say, when they have their first menses, when they start to menstruate. They're being initiated to the rhythms and cycles of life and death and rebirth in their own bodies. And indigenous cultures support that and honor that and empower that, and the power and the rituals of initiation for the young girls in support of what Mother Nature's doing to them, helps them to own that power and honor it in their lives. Well, there's cultures that still have those initiatory rites for the girls. For the boys here in our culture, not so much, not so much that's meaningful. There's different rites, like the bar mitzvah in the Jewish tradition, which is mostly a ceremonial, although it does have meaning for some people, but it doesn't have the real power of an initiatory experience. And maybe some people disagree with me about that, but that's what I've seen in my own experience. And the truth is that when we're little boys, we're just doing our little boy thing. But when testosterone comes on, it's a whole nother matter, because that's opening a doorway to power and strength, which includes the power and physical strength to be able to take another life just with our bare hands. So indigenous cultures recognize when that power is turned on to those boys, they need to go through an experience with the elders that helps them understand what that power is about and how to use it in a socially integrative way to protect life, to honor life, to take care of life. And in the absence of how to use that power, as in our case, along with schizophrenic notions about sexuality and our feelings, is, you know, you can only be a good man if you have no weakness and you're always in control and you're John Wayne and the hero. And so we have to deny our own tenderness, our own compassion, our own beauty, our own kindness and caring and all of those qualities and our own and the wisdom of the feminine power inside of us. We have to deny all of that. And so we get pretty warped as a result of that. I mean, the statistic that one or two out of every four women has been raped. Unbelievable. But where is that coming from? We don't learn how to take care of, you don't learn how to work with the power of our sexuality. So it comes out in all kinds of weird ways, or repress it or deny it. And then it comes out even more weirdly, or in violence toward women. So I saw in my own experience the acting out behaviors when I was in that shadow possession time, 14 to 17, and the behaviors that I did, how destructive they were. And my own confused feelings about sexuality and how to deal with that, the confusion of that, the angst of all of that. And I was seeking, and when I went to college and started to study and learn I to try to understand my behavior, I realized that my acting out behavior from my early teenage years was not just from the wounds that I had that hadn't been addressed, but was also seeking a measure of well, who am I? Who am I? What am I? And what am I made of? And so a rite of passage in a traditional culture, there's no guarantee that you're going to succeed in the rite of passage. In fact, you might not even live through the rite of passage. So it's a real testing in some way of you. And it's how you meet that test and how you respond to that test that can grow you with the help of the elders and the wisdom of the ceremony of the initiation into a recognition that you're not here by accident, that the great creative powers of the universe give you your life with a purpose. And you're given certain gifts that you need to develop to the highest degree that you can develop them. Toward what purpose? Not to feed your ego, not to narcissistically show to the world what a great person you are. Just the opposite, to feed your people, to help your people, to help your tribe, your group address the challenges that they're facing. And that's what a healthy and responsible man does, to use that power they're given through the physical body. Our culture teaches us just the opposite, with its crazy values and materialism and egocentrism and that leads to a lot of the problems that we have. Most of the violence in the world is committed by men, right? And it's not that we're bad guys. We're just not socialized. We're not taught how to work with that power that comes into us when the testosterone hits. And so experiencing the lack of it and seeing how my juvenile delinquency acting out was unconsciously put myself in testing situations where there could be real consequences. I could go to jail. I could get killed. I could kill somebody, this, that, and the other thing. Let me see how I respond to those and get to measure myself as a man. In those acting out behaviors, it's an unskillful measurement and right. toxic measurement of a man as compared to a positive understanding of your powers as a young adolescent coming into manhood from indigenous initiations.
Do you think that there's something, I don't know, like an instinct or something that is within men to want to have these initiatory experiences, but yet our culture doesn't seem to provide too many of them?
Yeah, totally. That's what I think my juvenile delinquency acting out risk-taking behavior. Yeah. Let me take this risk where I know there's a real chance of if I don't meet whatever the test is, I could be in serious trouble. So, and it's not guaranteed.
Yeah.
So I think there's an, like you say, I think there's a, there's with that, with the juice of the testosterone that comes in, there's an inborn need to find out, to discover, how can I use what's happening to me that I don't understand in a way that, number one, feels good and leads to me doing good in the world. I think that's innately in us. And when it's not met, it comes out in destructive ways, like I did for 4 years in my delinquency phase.
Yeah, and there's a definite connection between the individual and the culture, because it seems as if, you know, if we have this collection of men that have not undergone these meaningful initiatory experiences, that the culture is going to reflect that. And I see that. It seems that, you know, the culture is full of, you know, the machismo, and it's like an abusive culture, not one that seems to be predicated on compassion or wisdom or actual manhood. It seems very childish in many ways.
It's totally immature. We have a very immature culture compared to the ones that have been around for thousands of years, paying attention to how nature works and how to be in harmony with it.
Yeah. Do you think, this isn't anything that you discuss in the book, but it's kind of connected. We hear a lot of talk about this sort of psychedelic renaissance. And, you know, renaissance just means rebirth, and rebirth is part of an initiatory process. And I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are. Do you think that maybe, and we can extend this to your understanding of psychedelic here, that it's not just with the medicines, but do you think that the earth is, and maybe morphic fields are kind of like, here are the tools that you need at this time?
Yeah. So it occurred to me quite some time ago, the similarity between when you or I get sick with an infection of some sort, what does our body do? It creates a fever, creates a heightened fire inside. We throw up, you know, we have diarrhea, or we have it all, and none of it's pleasant. But what's it really doing? It's the wisdom of the body doing what it knows how to do to transform the infection agent and restore and nurture and strengthen the wisdom inside of us that knows how to heal. So the when the infection hits, you know, we cut our hand or something, and immediately the wisdom of the body knows how to start sending white blood cells there to start healing the process, the healing process of what needs to happen to address that wound or the infection we have. So it occurred to me a long time ago when ayahuasca, which I first got involved with back in the 80s through Terrence McKenna, who some of the listeners might know. Terrence invited a handful of us, Ralph Metzner, myself, and Leo Zeff, and four or five others, to his place in Hawaii, where he was living at the time and growing the medicine he'd brought back from the Peruvian Amazon, to test out his formula there. And so that was my introduction to working with ayahuasca. And I was very surprised over the years to see it spread around the world. It's becoming like an in thing in mainstream magazines and media, stories after one after the other about it, and people you'd never expect. I'd never expect to try a psychedelic talking about their experiences of it. So what's going on here? What's all this about? And the mushrooms coming into greater usage and social acceptance in some circles now. So what's going on here? And so it occurred to me that because of the direness of our societal crises, environmental and social crises, which are getting worse given what's coming out of Washington lately and other places around the world, authoritarianism, all based on fear of the other and false belief in separation. Mother Earth is sick because of what we've done to her and are doing to her. And so what she's doing, she's releasing some of her immune system wisdom through plants to help us wake up, to help us see through the toxic, delusionary perception that we're suffering, to wake up and to see the truth of our underlying interrelated oneness with each other. So we stop treating each other and the earth and the water and the air and everything as it's separate from us. So it's like, I think the prevalence of this quote, second renaissance of psychedelics has to do with the wisdom of Mother Earth saying, oh my God, it's I don't know, these people are already, what they're doing, they're already taking out huge amounts of what I've created. The beautiful animals and plants that are already gone because of what we've done. So they're on the verge, right on the verge of taking it all out. Mother Earth's going to keep going. She's not going anywhere until the sun dies, you know, in 5 billion years. So she'll just reinvent herself as she's done many times over the billions of years of her existence. So she's not going anywhere, but humanity right on the precipice. And so in that sickness that we're in, listeners might want to read up about with Tycho, infection, mind virus. She's pumping out these immune juices to try to help us wake up, to heal the misperception from which all the difficulties come from.
Yeah, I've had Paul Levy on the program a couple of times to talk about Wetiko, and I've got one of the recordings I've got in the bank is another one with Paul Levy. But yeah, there's the mind virus and of greed. And I have students read Robin Wall Kimmerer chapter from Braiding Sweetgrass on Wendigo, which is, you know, essentially the same thing, that it's this cannibalistic spirit that has invaded all of us. But within that, there's also the potential for healing. I think that's what Paul Levy says, is that, you know, the potential for healing is already there within Wetiko. And it seems like that's kind of what we have to do is, I don't know, acknowledge this, you know, we have to acknowledge the sickness, but this is something that collectively, it seems as if we have to go through it. And I've been wondering, where are we in the process? And a lot of people I've talked to seem to think that we're kind of like at the end tail of the process. And I think we're at the very beginning of the process. I think that there's still a lot of, we still have to go through that death and then the resurrection. I think when you say the precipice, that's what I see. You know, we're standing on the brink of that.
We're rushing toward it. No, I agree with you. And it reminds me of how you or your listeners might be aware of the Hopi prophecy, which predicts a lot of the crises we're in, that predictions were made way, way before the Euro invasion force came 500 years ago. They predicted the atom bomb and cars and planes, and they didn't use those words, but energetically that's what they saw in their predictions. Now I became aware of the Hopi prophecy in 1970, early 1970s, from early teachers, indigenous teachers. And the prophecy at that point, or when it was first made, it was 1,000 years ago or whenever, said there'll come a time when the people have forgotten how to live in right relationship with the original instructions about how to live in right relationship with the land and the spirits where you live. And that's when these certain signs are going to start manifesting as feedback about how you've lost your way.
Yeah.
So when I first heard about the prophecy, the elders said, it's we're already at a crossroads. The purification is already started. It's not, it's going to start next year or 2000, you know, 10 or whatever. It's already started. And the only question is, how severe is the purification going to be?
Right.
So this was 70, 71, 72. In those 50 years, we haven't exactly woken up and changed the conditions that are causing the problem. We've done just the opposite. We've just mainlined steroids into the process. And so the purification has gotten stronger and stronger, just like in the human body and the illness. When we don't listen to what the subtle signs of imbalance are telling us that we need to address, and it takes a harder tack to get our attention. It's not a punishment, it's just a harder test. This is really important that you listen to this, because if you don't listen to this and act on it, you're going to kill yourself or kill somebody else, or whatever time you have, you're going to be miserable. So I agree with you that it's going to get worse before and if it gets better. And what's happening with Trump in the White House and everything he's doing every day, there's another mind-blowing, you know, that basically causes suffering to innocent people. It's like he's the shadow of the United States on steroids, on mainline steroids. And again, it's not punishment per se, but it's like trying to help us wake up to, like, for instance, the history of the country. You know, the hypocrisy of in addition to the great ideals it had in the Declaration of Independence, beautiful, but there was the hypocrisy from the beginning. And it still hasn't been addressed. And with healing of any kind, we only have the power to change what we face the truth of, take responsibility for, learn from, because within that is the information of what needs to be done to bring through the healing. But if you don't go into it, you're not going to get it. If you deny it, if you run away from it, you project it, you distract yourself with all the distractions we have, you're basically feeding it and letting it continue. So It's like we didn't get the message, you know, in the last 50 years. Well, now we've got Trump in there pushing the pedal to the metal, bringing up what's been in the unconscious and not dealt with of U.S. history right into our faces. And whether we're going to make it, or somebody asked me yesterday, a couple of days ago, heard one of my podcasts, and they said, well, they said they thought I was optimistic. And I said, no, I don't think I'm optimistic. I'm hopeful. I try to be hopeful because I know, like as you pointed out, Levy and others said, the potential is, as long as we're alive and breathing, we can heal, we can transform. And the only way to do that is to face the truth of what we're experiencing, face the truth of where it's coming from. And therein is the information of what we can do to transform. So it's going to get worse. I'm not a pessimist, but I'm just reading realistically what's happening. The feedback from our toxic illusion is going to get more and more intense, trying to help us wake up to break through that imprisonment of the ego identity based on perceptions of separation, which feeds the fuel, which is the fear that feeds the fuel of violence.
Yeah. And I thought very recently in regards to Trump that he demonstrated very clearly someone who was an uninitiated male in many ways by taking on the role of the abuser. And that seems to be what he does. And I've long thought that he is the collective shadow for this nation.
Perfect archetype.
Yeah. And what I try to do is, you know, I never say that I hate Donald Trump, because I think that what's at the core is someone who is deeply, deeply wounded. Yep. And I have a feeling that he's never actually known true love, based on what I know about his parenting, you know, his parents and the people around him. I think there's this, like, very fragile, unloved child at the core of it that's acting out on the world stage.
I totally agree. Yeah, think about it, you know, in terms of our own experience, always the best teacher. When When do I snap at somebody I care about? When do I treat somebody in an unkind way? When do I, you know, my claws come out? And, when I'm not in touch with the truth of who I am. I'm not in touch with the love that I am. When I'm hurting, when I feel disconnected, when I'm fearful, when my ego feels attacked, that's when this behavior comes out. So all the hurtful behavior from Trump or from whomever who's doing hurtful behavior to other people is really evidence of exactly what you said, that they're frightened, they're in fear. This is the only way they know how to deal with it, is to hurt other people, try to control in a way that benefits them, that they think benefits them at the expense of others. And, but who cares about that as long as I'm getting what the only rewards I know, materialism, status, ego, more cars or bigger houses, whatever. And it, none of that feeds the soul. So they're not only are they fearful and hurting, but their souls are starving.
Yeah.
And they don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it is also very clear that there's a not a honoring of the feminine, but a attempt to suppress the feminine.
One of the most, I mean, growing up, I grew up in a macho culture, the sickness of a full macho culture. And wanting to be a real man, I bought into that. You know, you're going to be tough and strong and ass kicking and no pain and no tenderness. So we're repressing vital parts of ourselves. I mean, the feminine energy and wisdom is in all of us. So if we're repressing and denying a vital force of our creativity or our wisdom of our power, who's going to suffer? We're going to suffer. And so part of the healing that's needed is that I needed to do, and the medicine helped me, and being with Native people, it helped me see the honoring of, like, the woman when she's having her period. In our culture, it's a negative thing. You know, oh, she's on the rag, right? That was the expression that when I was growing up. And my experience with being with Native people now is where the woman who was going through her moon time would go off to a separate place where she didn't have to deal with a man, and she didn't have to cook and do all the household stuff, and she'd just be taken care of by other women and bring her food and watch the babies or whatever. And she could just be with her flow, and she'd just be with her dreams, and she just, and then the elders afterwards would come and ask, well, what was coming through your dreaming? Because that's a time of big opening. It's a powerful medicine time. So that's an example from my own experience of how I had to learn to befriend my own, as you terms it, my own feminine, to see how I had been violently oppressing her inside myself, and the price I was paying for that. And part of the pathway to opening to addressing the dynamics that you and I statistically die years before the women die, and the quality of our lives is less because of that repression and denial of the feminine, and tenderness and compassion and beauty and quote softness and love inside of us.
Yeah. So I know we're starting to get close to the end here, but I do have a couple of other questions for you, if you don't mind.
No, let's keep going as long as you want. I'm enjoying this.
Okay. Well, I did try to give them about an hour, but there are some other questions. One of the things that you do towards the end of the book is you start talking about the wisdom warrior. And it seems to me that the wisdom warrior is someone who has undergone the initiatory process and is acting from a place not of separation, but of connection and wholeness. They've integrated the shadow. They honor the feminine. And I don't want to go through all of them, because you do go through the various characteristics of the wisdom warrior. But one that I'm particularly interested in, and that is very relevant today, I think, is that of spiritual activists. So I was wondering if maybe you could talk a little bit about this idea of a spiritual activist, and what does that look like? What does it look like to ground activism in spirit?
Yeah. Well, let me step back one and just talk about wisdom. Just a quick definition of what wisdom means to me. That being that we've learned from our experience that the greatest fulfillment in our life is not coming from feeding our ego, serving our ego, but serving spirit, serving higher will. How can I use whatever talents or gifts or passion that I have to be meaningful in a way that is serving what truly dresses fullest blossoming and greatest good for everybody, for everything, not just To me, that's wisdom, that differentiation, serving spirit instead of wisdom, excuse me, instead of ego. And so as we pay attention to the suffering in the world, and we ask spirit, what, you give me this life, and you've given what I call the angels of protection, which all of us have, or we wouldn't be here. In our lives, many times there were some we know about, and sometimes we don't know about situations were happening. Just one molecule of to the left or right, we wouldn't be here. So the very fact that we're here means, to me, the creative power of the universe wants us here. And why does it want us here? To honor our purpose. What's our purpose in being here? To wake up and remember, I'm more than an ego. I'm more than a physical body. I'm more than the ego's stories. And in fact, I'm part of this oneness that's manifesting as humanity at this time, and given the problems and challenges and the suffering in the world, the gifts that Spirit's given me, that's my responsibility to develop, are to address those challenges, address the injustice, the economic inequity, the racism, the prejudice, the sexism, the violence, the fear, you name it. That in recognition of, especially for those of us listening to this program who are Caucasian backgrounds and males, heterosexual Caucasian males in this culture, how privileged we are, instead of feeling guilty or ashamed about that, face the truth of it, learn how to use it to help do meaningful change in the world. And to do that, not from like demonizing Trump or whoever is so different from our values, but recognizing how on the deepest level we're all interconnected. And if what I judge in another is like, you know, Christ said, you know, don't throw stones if you live in a glass house. Well, I well know I live in a glass house. So own my own potentials for what Trump does that are in me as a human being, and learn how to skillfully be in relationship with them so they don't run me, and use the power of all of that to show up and address the challenges in the world. If we do make that recognition about what real wisdom is to serve spirit, then surrender to spirit. Say, what do you want me to do? What with what you've given me and what I'm seeing and feeling and where I am and where I live and the situations and what's going in the world, I open to your guidance about what you want me to do to help address meaningful change. So acting from spirit to be a conscious agent of evolution. So an example of that is like in the 60s, when I was so involved in the anti-war movement, civil rights movement, all good causes, as far as I'm concerned, but it was coming from a place of judgment. So we would say, we're working for peace, but kill the pigs.
Yeah.
Without seeing, without any awareness of the schizophrenia of my own behavior. So with the growth over time and maturity, beginning to understanding the interconnections on a deeper basis, instead of demonizing the other, Trump or whatever, own those forces inside of me, develop skillful relationship with them. So once again, I can use that energy, because there's a lot of strength in all of that. There's a lot of energy to go out into the world, show up and do my part to be an agent of conscious change.
Yeah. One of the challenges that I see is, I think that almost every kind of spiritual tradition has an aspect of it, of this sort of spiritual activism or a concern with things like social justice and compassion. And we can look back to the civil rights movement, for example, and the civil rights movement was largely organized through the churches, through Black churches. And it seems to me that one of the challenges that we have right now is that especially, because my podcast is not about necessarily the traditional spiritual traditions. And I know that this is one of the fastest growing movements, although I understand that it's kind of slowed down a little bit of people who are identifying as spiritual but not religious. But there seems to be an organizing issue of to go back to, the 60s again, old Tim Leary, finding the others. How are we going to find the others to come together in a meaningful way to maybe help usher in or lead others through this initiatory process?
So I'm not quite clear what your question is.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just asking. It's like we don't have a community of churches here to from like the shamanic perspective or someone who just says, well, I'm just spiritual, but yet wants to work to be a spiritual activist. It seems that there has to be a way to connect everybody. And that's one of the things that I see that's missing right now is this way to connect the spiritual activists, I guess. And I know this isn't anything that's in your book. I'm just asking this question, kind of off the top of my head, but it's something that it concerns me. It's like, how do we make these connections in order to hopefully come out the other side?
Yeah, well, two responses, Nick. One is look around where you live, both in your local area. What groups, if any, are doing actions to address the causes that you're concerned about, and then take it a step further and go on the internet, positive aspect of the internet. Look for organizations that are addressing the causes that are meaningful to you. You'll get plenty of information about those kinds of organizations because there are a tremendous amount of people who are doing alternative ways of living and meeting our needs than the ways we've been conditioned that are based on respect and harmony for our interconnectedness, for nature, for people. So that's one thing. Do some homework. The other is listen to the assignments you get from Spirit about. I'm going to say what she wants you to do and then start doing them. So I'll give you an example of that. One of the assignments I got from my spiritual Huichol grandmother, now in the spirit world, was she said, after I finished my initiation, she said, the people in the north, the gringos in El Norte, they've forgotten that the fire is alive as a spirit. So a vital part of my initiation was a deeper understanding and relationship to the spirit of the fire, what the Huichols call Tatewadi, grandfather fire spirit. So he says, so you need to go back up there up north and help people remember the spirit of the fire and to listen to it. So I started doing, since I've been here in Santa Barbara, started offering what I call a fire ceremony. And just inviting people, come sit by the fire here. We're going to meet here at such and such a time, at such a date. Bring a piece of firewood. It doesn't cost anything. We're going to sit around the fire, and I'm just going to share with you, take you through a little kind of a ceremony ritual that's going to help you open up to that. What we're experiencing as the fire is actually a transmission of consciousness. It's the creative wisdom power of the universe that's coming to us through those flames. Because if you think about it, where did that fire come from? It came from the sun, right? Where did the sun get its juice? Previous solar explosion. Where did that get its juice? Previous. So you hopscotch 14 and a half billion years back to the bursting of the singularity, the blossoming into all that we manifest as the physical universe today. There's a direct transmission line from that initial birthing of this universe to us here right now watching this fire. There's a communication of consciousness, of intelligence. And if we open up our minds to that And now, and this little ritual that I take people through helps us to do that. And now we're just going to sit in silence for a half an hour or so and open to the possibility that this wisdom energy of the universe, this intelligence, has something to communicate to us that can help us address the challenges of our personal lives and empower us. But Paul, I call it polishing up our stardust so we can show up to do our part to help heal the sacred hoop. And then we just sit in silence for a while. Toward the end, I'll sing a song, or at some point I'll sing a song that listening to the spirit of the fire taught me. And then at the end of that period of silence, go around the circle and anything come through from your listening. Just an inquiry, just a time of reflection and inquiry. Nothing here forcing you to believe anything, or just open up to your experience of sitting in the silence with an open mindset that there's something being communicated here. Pay attention. Don't try to make anything happen. Just pay attention to the truth of what you're experiencing, opening yourself up in that way. We go around the circle, amazing things come through for people. So I've started offering these fire circles more and more frequently. More and more people are coming. And I offer that just as an example of listening to guidance, the listeners listening to the guidance you get when you ask Spirit, what do you want me to do to help be a social activist, a force of conscious evolutionary energy into the problems of the world? And you're going to get assignments. Now, most likely, they're not going to be in your ego's comfort zone, so you're going to have to make a choice of whether to, ooh, that's too scary, I'm not going to do that, or, yeah, I'll give myself permission to be anxious and fearful. And I don't know how people are going to respond to this idea of a fire ceremony with this weird white guy, you know. But the guidance is saying to try it. Just put it out there. Don't be attached to an outcome. And it opens a doorway up for people to connect with the deeper truth of who they are and our interconnectedness.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you for the example. That very enlightening.
Literally.
So, yeah. Well, and it brings to mind that I had a guest on a couple of years ago that I often would ask guests, especially when we were talking about the environment, and now we can just say the state of the world, you know, I would ask them, do you have hope? And you've already answered that question. But I had one guest who said that he thought that hope was a misplaced virtue, and that what we really need, and I think this is kind of getting into what you were just saying, is we need courage. You know, we need the courage to listen and the courage to act.
Yeah, and courage isn't the absence of fear or anxiety.
Right.
I mean, most of the things I do, I have anxiety and fear about, and all kinds of stories my ego cooks up. But I've learned over the years not to give power to that, so not deny it, but not give her the power to run the show. Yeah, I hear you. I understand you. The little child who's frightened is going to hear some love for you, and I'm going forward with what you asked me to do.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap this up. Let me ask you the final few questions that I have. One is, what do you have coming up next? My understanding is that The Psychedelic Shaman is out now. It's been published and it's available widely at any bookstore, online at bookshop.org, Amazon. Is that correct?
That's correct. As far as I know, yeah, it's available today, starting today. Today's the birthing.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, and we're recording this on March 4th. So yeah, good day. So what do you have coming up next? What are you working on now?
Well, there's actually tonight I have a book signing and heading out on my 51st year of vision questing. I think I mentioned that week Saturday. And then in April through the Shift Network, offering a 7-week course on the principles of what I'm talking about today, the mind expansion techniques of shamanism applied with wisdom and the positive qualities of the warrior to address meaningful change in our lives.
Okay. Do you have a website or social media where...
Dr. Tom Pinkson at gmail.com is my website. Every Sunday, my older daughter asks me questions on Shamanic Sundays. It's free. 10 o'clock California time. And you can get all that information on my website,
Dr. Tom Pinkson
at gmail.com.
Okay. All right. I will put in the show notes and the video description, I'll put links for your book and the website so that people can find out more about you and get a copy of The Psychedelic Shaman, The Wisdom Warrior's Path to Transformation. So, Tom, I'm very grateful for the time that you spent with me today. I'm glad we finally had the opportunity to
Yes.
speak. I've enjoyed it very much. And, you know,
Me too.
and thank you. I always applaud people who are working towards the healing of the world. We need a lot of people out there doing that work.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. Thank you for the work you're doing. And it's all about showing up to do our part to help heal the sacred hoop. May it be
Yeah.
so.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a wrap on episode 181 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you are a part of my YouTube audience. Now, all my listeners know what's coming up next. All the usual. Please sign up for my Patreon. Share this with friends and family and on social media too, please. Subscribe to the podcast or follow it on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. I know you know the drill. But here's the thing. All of that is really important. Sharing, subscribing, or following, they're all free, and it only takes a few seconds of your time, and it really does help. Subscriber numbers are important, as are followers on podcast platforms. Right now, putting together this podcast is a labor of love, and I do love it, but a lot of work goes into creating each episode, several hours each week. I'm in the process of making changes to improve the podcast and the YouTube channel. It's slow going, but your support will help me speed up the process and ensure that I can continue with the podcast and offer much more content than what I provide now. As I always like to say, I'm here in the Front Range now, doing missionary work in regards to religion, spirituality, and ecology, consciousness, and the esoteric, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's sacred relationship with the living earth. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, and you know, I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be at peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.